Welcome to the 400th episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. This is a different episode. There's no guest. The guest is me. I'm going to do an Ask Me Anything episode to celebrate this landmark. In the past, I haven't really celebrated landmarks. I've just been too busy kind of going to the next one. And as soon as I see the landmark coming up, I'd be like, oh, I've already recorded episodes for this. I'll do it the next time. So here we go. 400 episodes, Ask Me Anything. Over the last couple of weeks, I've put out Instagram boxes, LinkedIn, email, stuff like that. So if you're not following me on those three platforms, I'm on LinkedIn, Mr. Gary Fox. I'm on Instagram, obviously, Mr. Gary Fox or The Entrepreneur Experiment. And I'm on the email. So go to MrGaryFox.com, subscribe to the email. I send out a free newsletter every single Saturday. All the questions are from here. I've added some names for people to include their names. For others, I haven't. It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through those milestone moments. Deciding to commit to the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Nostra, an Irish IT company, offers world-class managed IT services, cloud solutions, IT support, and more, all tailored to meet your business needs. Whether you're streamlining operations or boosting productivity, their expert team is ready to help. Visit nostra.ie or email info@nostra.ie to see how they can solve your IT challenges today. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code FOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code FOX20 and elevate your marketing game today. So let's kick off the very first question. What was the beginning of the journey like? I would like to hear your reflection startup story from Toby. This is actually a great question. And I've got asked this a lot because 400 episodes in, people haven't listened to obviously some of the early episodes. So people don't really have a clue how this all started. This started as an experiment, hence the name, but it didn't start as an interview podcast. This started as a way of figuring out a new business. There's a real irony here because now podcasting is the business. So I wanted to do an experiment over 12 months where I'd start like multiple businesses. So I thought I'd start like maybe five businesses. Looking back, this is madness, right? Because I thought I'd have like a couple of side hustles that I get going. So at the time I was running Hostbullers, which was my property management company. We specialized in short-term lettings, mainly in Airbnb. I'd started that back in 2015, I think. Started on my own, started with 500 quid, started managing Airbnb properties. That's a separate episode in itself, which I actually think I might do because it's pretty interesting. And I built it up to do really well. That did, we were doing 70 properties at one stage just before COVID and two incredible staff members working with me, a load of contractors working around us to help us. And we had a part-time staff member as well. So it was kind of going perfectly. I had two incredible people working with me, Rafa and Claire, and they were essentially getting to the stage where they were so competent, they were almost running the business for me. I was like, oh, this could be quite cool. I love doing content. And I always knew the Airbnb business would be a business for a time. I knew it needed to evolve and it would never be the business because when you're building on someone else's platform, you're always got platform risk. We saw this with TikTok this week. TikTok got shut down. If you've built your business just on TikTok, you're screwed. I always thought it would be Airbnb would be the problem. It wasn't. It was COVID. So what happened was COVID happened, but I'm going to skip backwards a little bit. So I started the podcast as an experiment where I was going to document these little side hustles that I was doing. But like literally 3-4 weeks in, I realized that that was a terrible idea for a load of different reasons. Number one, I had a full-time business to run. I didn't have time to do side hustles, which is crazy. I don't know where I thought I was going to get the time. And number two, I had, obviously, as I said, I had staff members, I had clients, I had people relying on me. To see me going off starting other things would have optically looked really, really bad. And it came down to that. I started doing interviews as like filler episodes, but they turned out to be the actual thing. So that's how this all started. I was going to document my own journey. And I was fascinated by people on YouTube that were doing that. I was fascinated by podcasts. I was fascinated by entrepreneurial stories. The theme was going to be, I was going to document my own journey and have like special guests on who were going to help me. Like special guests were going to be like the people you saw in the early stages who'd like come on and help me with a different stage of the business. And that just evolved over time. And that's what all businesses do. They evolve. They start off being this thing and they end up way over here. And that's the lesson I always say to founders is like, just start because you'll end up in a completely different direction. That's where it started. It really took legs during COVID. So during COVID, my property management business literally shut down overnight. We lost like literally €500,000 in 4 weeks. So I had all this free time and I needed an outlet. So I started ramping up production on the podcast. I started doing remote interviews and obviously people had loads of time. So it's kind of like a perfect storm. People had loads of time. I had loads of time. And the podcast had developed a little bit of a name, but not too much, but enough so that people were like, oh yeah, that I've heard of this or whatever. So that happened. And then I kind of doubled down. And we were still managing the property business. We were still trying to keep it going. We were doing like emergency rentals and we were doing like people who needed to isolate, all this kind of mad stuff. But we weren't making any money. We were just doing it just to keep the lights on, to try help out our landlords. So we were gradually starting to lose a lot of money. And as COVID kind of eased and came back, I had to make the decision to go, right, am I going to do this again? Am I going to ramp this back up? And the answer was no. I didn't want to do it anymore. I kind of realized that A, it was always going to run its time anyway. And B, that's not the business I wanted to be in. I realized how stressful it was when I stepped away. This was a 24 hours a day business because we're essentially running what is kind of a mini hotel. Like we had, I think at the time we had 50 properties plus. You might have 300 people staying per night. So there's always issues nonstop. Now the girls were unbelievable. I knew if my phone rang, there was a major problem. But my phone inevitably rang once, twice a day with a major problem. When you have that many people coming through that many properties, you're going to have major problems all the time. It's only when I stepped away that I realized how stressful that business was. Why I love podcasting and why I didn't love the property business was from the property business, you're starting from scratch every single day. You might have 300 people coming in today, 300 people tomorrow, 300 people the next day. It's just a continual, like Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill. It's kind of how I felt. Whereas with the podcast, I do it today. Like I'm doing this now on a Monday afternoon. I'm going to put this out and this can be listened to once, twice, 10 times, 100,000 times, a million times. The work's already done. And the compounding effect really kicks in. So like when I do a podcast, it just compounds and compounds and compounds. And I try to record evergreen content. So this should be relevant in 6 months' time as it is today. So people can still enjoy this in 6 months' time as it is today. That was nearly a 6 minute answer to the first question. We better move this along. Second question is an easier one. Who is your dream guest that has never been on the pod? And that's from Owen. This is super easy. And these are people I want to get this year. Patrick and John Collison. Come at me, boys. There's the shout out. I'd love to get them on the pod this year. That is one of my major goals for 2025 is try to get the Collison brothers on the podcast. So if anyone's listening in Stripe, don't know why I'm doing the phone symbol. Don't phone me. I hate getting phone calls. Send me an email. I'll send you an email. What's been the most challenging part of getting to 400 episodes? That's also from Owen. There's been like thousands of micro challenges. What's been the most challenging part? It's just staying consistent, I think. That's like anything. Like what's the most challenging part of any business? It's staying consistent. It's not missing uploads. It's continuing to put out episodes every single week. I think the most challenging part is just to stay consistent. I've loved it though. I think that's why I've been able to do it, but that's a question later on. I haven't gone through these in detail. I got someone to read through them to see was there any major prep I needed to do. I wanted to do this so I could do my podcast so I can react naturally to the questions. So I'm not like just over prepared and give you kind of rote answers. I want to have like some kind of like natural curiosity to this. So if I'm reading the questions in a slow way, this is why. I'm interested in the underlying unit economics of the world of podcasting. How can an individual or brand make it sustainable and profitable based on your experience? It would be great to get you to break down some numbers based on different variables. It doesn't have to be your own, of course. That's from Ty Geary. And then a related question from Adam Fallon. Would love to know the revenue model behind a successful podcast. Okay, I'll start at the end and work backwards. Revenue model on a successful podcast is generally sponsorship. So at the start of my podcast, I have my three sponsors. I'll read out their read. I'll do a mid-roll read as well for the main sponsor. That is how I get paid 80% of my revenue. It's sponsorship. That's true for most podcasts. Again, I can only speak for me as in exactly my numbers and stuff. My numbers are probably 80% sponsorship, 20% all the other stuff. So the other stuff would be like people paying you to host events, people paying you to speak, people paying you to interview people for them, doing like live events, conferences, things like that. I do some teaching as well, but that's not directly related to the podcast, but it definitely helps. So that's it. Sponsorship is the main one for most podcasts. And then I'll go back to Tyke's question about the unit economics. So podcasts are the easiest thing in the world to start and the hardest thing in the world to scale and grow. The unit economics, there's a stat out there where it's like 99% of people don't get past episode 20, I think. So anyone that starts, 99% of people don't get past episode 20. I'd say that's even lower, if I'm honest with you. I'd say most people don't get past episode 8 or 9. So the unit economics are interesting. You will have to put out a lot of content before you actually start to get major numbers. However, there's a caveat to this. Now that podcasts are video, you can get decent numbers quicker. When I started, it was all audio. So it was much, much slower to grow. Whereas now in 2025, number one, you have to do video. So if you're thinking about starting a podcast, you have to do video. It's just how it is. But that's good because it's good and bad, right? It'll make it much more expensive to start, but it will also help you grow a lot faster. So since I started doing proper video with Ben, a videographer, and then doing short form clips, the podcast has grown exponentially, like 10x, generally. So what I would do is the unit economics in this, how can I break this down for you? One of my episodes to produce can cost up to 800 euro. So, because I've got a videographer, I've got a studio, I've got an editor, and I've got loads of fixed costs, such as like software and things like that. If you're starting out, your unit cost could be quite cheap because you could do them remote. If I was starting, I'd probably do some remote. And you can also just hire studios for the day. Unit costs and that, you can look them up online. How do you get to make it profitable? I think your niche is very important. And I'm going to talk about this later in the Q&A as well. Problem selection. That is one of the biggest things for entrepreneurs, the skills to learn. It's the same for your podcast. I would pick something, number one, that you love, that you can do pretty easily, as in like you don't have to do loads of prep for it. And number two, ideally the niche should be lucrative. I'm in the business niche. That kind of falls into like the finance niche. That kind of falls into the personal development niche. It's very, very lucrative because my audience is very specific. So if you're looking to do a profitable podcast, my answer to you would be, number one, do something that you love. And number two, hopefully that's in a niche that's very valuable. Business and finance niche, tech, they're all very, very valuable. If your podcast topic is going to be very broad, it's like a business, right? If you're targeting tennis players, right? That's a niche topic. But you know exactly who you're targeting, and the podcast is either for you or it's not for you. I'm not a tennis player. I'm automatically not going to be your listener. But you'll get the yes or no. You'll, yes, that's exactly for me. No, that's not for me. So I would say pick a niche that you love and pick a niche that's hopefully valuable. I hope that kind of helps. I'm just trying to look back as to how I can break down the numbers. So your costs, like your costs starting out are probably looking at like maybe cost you 100 quid to produce each episode. There's some software and stuff you need, but you can do it. If you do it super, super budget, you can do a remote podcast probably somewhere underneath 50 quid an episode. Then if you're going to hire editors and stuff, you're going into the hundreds. So you can produce your own. I edited my first 50, I think, which is good. And the fact that it shows you where all your mistakes are, all your coughs and all that kind of stuff are, you're editing them out. Whereas now I tend to be a little bit smoother and I tend not to have as much editing needed. So I also have an incredible editor. I hope that helps. Podcasting as a business is an interesting model. Generally, sponsorship is your main thing. For me this year, it's to de-risk from sponsorship. So I want to launch my products and services this year, and I want to do a live event this year to try de-risk that. I love that your mind plays such an integral part for you in everything that you do. I'd love to know what daily, weekly, or monthly framework / Gary OS you use for this in a little bit more detail. That's from Adam Kerwin. That's funny that Adam said Gary OS, because that's actually what my Notion docs is called. I have a Gary operating system. That is how much of a nerd I am. I have a Notion doc, and then that is Gary OS. That's my operating system. I think of my life as systems. If you listen to the podcast or you read my email, you'll know I think in systems. I read a couple of great books a couple of years ago that kind of changed how I thought about like goals and life and mindset and planning and all that kind of stuff. And systems are how I kind of manage my life. So I've got like my brain system, my body system, my business system, life system, family, finances, health, longevity. I have systems, subsystems then within in all of them. And then in terms of the mind, how I think about my brain, what daily, weekly or monthly frameworks. So I'll start daily. Daily, I do a planning session right here with my notebook. So I come into this exact desk. I sit down here. I have two screens in front of me. I'll try and keep them off for the first 15 minutes. I'll sit down with my notebook. At the start of every week, I'll jump onto that in a second, but start of every day, I do one thing. I write down on the top of the page, you can see it here. That's my Monday one. On the top of the page, I'll write down my three main goals for the year. And then I'll write down my three main goals for that day. And those two have to combine. Those two have to overlap. So my three main goals for the year are XYZ. And then my three main goals for the day have to contribute towards moving towards my three main goals for the year, if that makes sense. So I have to get those three done before I move further down. I think the problem is we set too many goals and stuff. And today is slightly different because I've written down admin. That's for a Monday brain dump. We'll get onto that in a second. And then once I have those three done, I can move on to my admin tasks. They're all the small things you need to do, like reply to John's email about studio selection, things like that. Your three main goals are how I think about the day. Hit your first three, and then you can move on to everything else. My daily brain process, then I'll read every single day. I'll read one chapter of a book, or I'll catch one of the Sunday papers or something. I'll read for like 15 minutes minimum, ideally a half an hour if I have time, every single day. That's for my brain in terms of just like that helps me be creative. It helps me be calm, helps me think. I think to be a good thinker, you have to be a good writer. To be a good writer, you should be a good reader. That's kind of how I think about things. In terms of my brain, then on a weekly basis, I do a weekly review every single weekend. Ideally on a Sunday morning, I'll sit down with a nice cup of coffee. I'll do a review of the week. So I'll do, what are my wins? So I'll do three wins, three highlights and three lessons. So the lessons I've rebranded from losses, because I think as an entrepreneur, when you manage yourself, you can focus too much on what's gone wrong. So I try rebrand them as learnings, because I think a lot of us make the same mistake over and over, but we just keep repeating it because we haven't learned anything. So I do three wins, three highlights, three learnings. That's kind of my weekly. And then that helps me get in the mindset of like what I'm going to do the following weeks. And then the second half of that coffee session will be mapping out my week. So I'll look at my calendar then. Then I'll turn on the laptops and I'll look at my calendar for the week. I'll plan out like my training. So when my training is going to be, where my work blocks are going to be, my meetings will already be scheduled. So I've tried this new thing whereby I only try have calls after 2 p.m. kind of from like 9 or 10 to 1 is generally deep work time. I'll try do whatever actual work I have to do then. And then the second half of the day from 2 to 5 is calls, admin, email. Don't always stick to it, but I try have a rule. That's kind of a new rule I have. And that helps my brain kind of go, okay, we're in deep work mode here from 9 to 1. Sit down and do your stuff. And I also find I'm better in the morning. So that's why I put all that stuff in the morning. I think having rules, again, goes back to my systems thing. Having rules are good because it helps you have a framework for your day, for your life, how you live. If you say yes to everything, you're on someone else's timetable. If you have rules and you have like a little bit of like a system that you can answer and go, I can't do a call Monday, but I can do a call Tuesday at 2, Wednesday at 2, Thursday at 2. So people have be listening to this going, huh, that's why he always says that. I just try to do them at a certain time because people are pretty flexible if you set the parameters. You set what you're going to do with your time, or other people will set that for you. That's kind of how I think about it on a weekly basis. Then monthly is just kind of a bigger version of what those two together. I'll do like a bigger monthly review. I'll go through all the stuff that I've worked on, wins, losses, learnings, and try create like a sense check of where I'm going. Am I progressing towards the year? So I'll look ahead to the year and go, right, you said you're going to do these big goals this year. Did January help you move towards those? And I also have like more fun stuff. So I also have like a personal bucket list that I work off. So I'm trying to do 12 things from the bucket list this year, and I'll review that. So it's not all like boring business stuff. I try have a real blend of like body, business, brain, family, fun, finance. So I'll try kind of keep a good balance among them all. And then the monthly sessions are a bit deeper. They're probably like 90 minutes. And I'll sit down and kind of go through everything and then like look ahead to go, what fun stuff's coming up? What do I need to book? I'm trying to find a better blend between like fun stuff to look forward to and just getting on and doing the work. This year for me is all about massive action. Just take massive action on everything. That's kind of my goal for this year. So I hope that answers it in a good way for your founder framework or for your kind of mental health framework. I hope that is helpful. Then just more so on the mental health side of things, I'll train almost every day, probably have one rest day. That for me is the cornerstone of my mental health. That is the cornerstone of my brain system, is that I train in the morning first thing. If I get that training session done in the morning first thing, I am going to more than likely have a good brain day. I'm going to have a good mental health day. I'm going to have a good mental health week. Everything is downstream of physical activity for me in my mental health. So that is something that I've learned over the years, and I've kind of, sometimes I wouldn't prioritize it because I'm like, oh, you know, you can't train today. Like you've got other stuff to do and you've got work and you've got commitments and stuff like that. Whereas now I realize if I don't train, it's not a good day for me. I don't feel good, I don't act good, and I don't turn up well for other people. So number one is, how do you turn up the best for other people? You look after yourself first. It's where the oxygen mask comes down from the airplane first. You have to save yourself first. If you're just going through the motions as a parent, as a partner, as a business person, you're just going to be miserable for everyone else around you. Whereas if you take a bit of time, have your priorities go, these are the 2-3 things I need to do for me that day. That's not selfish. That's the opposite. That means when you're turning up for your partner or your family or your kid or your business partner or your friends, whatever, you're there. You're switched on mentally. You're not resentful. You're not like anxious. You're properly switched on. So that for me is cornerstone. So I'd love to know, out of all the episodes you've done, which has been listened to or viewed the most, from Hugh Boland. This is one of the questions I had to check. So someone flagged that for me. Michael Corcoran, ex-head of social at Ryanair. That is our most downloaded episode. I should have recorded a different answer because his ego is just going to go through the roof after this. You mentioned before that you're cautious about who you invite on the show. Can you share more insights into your selection process and how you triage potential guests? Do you have a checklist of sorts for potential candidates? Great question from Luke Manning. I am cautious, yeah, because as you get a little bit further on your journey, you know, you have to be a little bit more careful. There's more people listening. You've set expectations for people so that when they tune in, they know that they're getting, hopefully, a great chat with me. They're getting a guest who's really interesting, that's genuine, that fits my kind of profile of what I want to talk about, and that it's going to be a good chat. So that's the criteria of what I look for in terms of like, I want people who are open. I want people who are honest. I want people who are building a real business. I want people who just aren't actively looking to flog something. They're not on just to shill their latest thing. Ideally, they're not someone that's been on every single podcast, every single TV show, every single radio show. I try to find a blend of people who have a little bit of a profile, but maybe haven't told their story in a full way before. So that's exactly what I'm looking for. Most of all, I'm looking for great founders and great people. How do I select them? I generally work off referral. So I'll ask this week's guest for next week's guest. Not exactly like that, but I'll ask this week's guest for 2 recommendations for people who I should have on the show. This works in a couple of different ways. This works that they've hopefully had a good time. They now know my vibe. They know what I'm like. Hopefully they've had a good experience and they know what kind of person to recommend to me. Then it works on the other side in that they can reach out to a person that they know and go, look, I was on Gary's pod. That's social proof number 1. Tick, then the friend is now going, oh, Luke was on the pod, must be half decent. And number two, they can hopefully give like some context as to what I'm looking for. Again, that saves me a job, kind of trying to explain everything about it. And number three, then this should be like the warm intro generally will lead to at least conversation, if not a podcast. So I'll generally ask for two or three intros or recommendations. And of those two or three, I'll usually get one. So that's kind of how I select them. And the criteria is pretty simple. Good people know good people. So it's the greatest hack ever in that great guests know other great people. So it's kind of, it was the greatest hack I ever discovered, to be honest, is to ask people for referrals. I used to be like scanning everything, trying to find people. Whereas I kind of also in the benefit now of the pod's built up quite a good name, and hopefully I have too, so that people actually want to be on now. So sometimes you get inbound requests, but I'll always then ask. The second part of Luke's question there is asking about like, how do I select them? And, you know, do I have a tick list? I don't have a tick list. It's not like that. A lot of it is gut. I'll kind of like go, I know that story. I've read about them for 5 years. They're in. This goes back to what I said earlier about like, I'm just constantly studying this stuff. I love business. I love founders. I love business stories. I love knowing how businesses work. I'm just obsessed with knowing, even when I'm just in like a cafe or I meet someone and they have like a haulage business. I get chatting to them. I'm like, how does that work? How do you make money? How does this work? How does that? Not in like a nosy hole way, but more so I'm just fascinated by business models and just how it all works. And if you're not like too annoying, people generally tell you pretty much anything. So I try then find like people I'm genuinely interested in. I don't tend to bring on people whose business models are very complicated or whose business models I have no interest in, or stuff that I just know would be way beyond my depth and the listener's depth, that we'd just be lost. And to be honest, the biggest thing is the story. Do they have a good story? Are they ideally a good person? And are they willing to tell that story? Because I've had people on before and they have a good story. They're not entirely willing to tell it. They'll tell you like the nice bits, the glossy bits. And what'll happen is you'll get like the rose tinted glasses thing, whereby they'll come on, they'll tell you a little bit about the start, the glasses go on, they'll skip forward 10 years and they'll be like, oh, and then we sold for 10 million. I'm like, oh, okay, bring me back 9 years there and tell me about all that. So you'll always hear me ask this in the pod. I'll be like, oh, hold on there. Bring me back now to when this happened. Bring me back like 6 or 7 years. That's how I look for guests. What's one piece of advice you've heard repeatedly on the podcast do you think most entrepreneurs overlook or underestimate? That's from Siobhan Connor, good friend of mine. What piece of advice do people overestimate? Is there a problem? Are you solving a problem here, or are you building a product that you think is cool? The vast majority of first-time founders will forget to actually find out, is there a problem? That sounds silly. You're going to think I'm being reductionist here, but absolutely not. What happens is, it happened last week, a founder reached out to me and they're like, oh, look, I'm building this thing. And I'm not an expert, but I'll genuinely talk to most people who reach out to me if they're building something. I'll kind of give an opinion. And again, I always caveat that opinions are worthless. Talk to people who have experience and talk to lots of people, but the only person's opinion that really matters is yours. Like, are you going to stick and build this? But what people tend to overlook every single time is that they forget to talk to enough customers. Are you willing to buy this? Are you willing to buy this for 10 euros, 500 euros, 1,000 euros and pre-sell it? Charlie from Bounce. I refer to his episode all the time because he summed what it is to be an early stage entrepreneur up perfectly. If people followed the Charlie model, we would have far more successful businesses in Ireland and the world. His model is this, the three steps: listen, sell, build. They are the three things you need to do as an early stage founder when you're figuring out, do I have a business here? Do I have something that people are going to buy? Listen to your customers, sell them your solution, build it. I guarantee you, I could say this 100 times and 99% of people will still skip the steps. They will start going to the build process. They will flip it on its head. They'll build it, then they'll try sell, and then finally they'll listen. And then they'll have to start the whole expensive process of ripping down everything they've done. That is the number one piece of advice I give to every single early stage founder. What advice do you have to invest in the stock market? What book or course should I read? Again, from Siobhan. This is not financial advice. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm going to tell you what I do. I read The Psychology of Money and The Art of Compounding. Those two books changed my life. Those two books changed how I think about my own psychology and investing. I used to think investing was this big, big, complicated thing. It's as complicated as you make it. So since 2016, I've been investing in the stock market and crypto. Do what you want to do. That's kind of my advice. My advice is invest regularly. Don't overthink it. Figure out what exactly you have some level of knowledge about. So for me, I generally pick like tech stocks or some early stocks that I'm confident that will, not confident, but I feel will do well. And I just invest the same amount all the time. Every month, I invest the same amount, regardless. I don't care if the market is up, down, sideways, in a spin. I don't care. The only times I've ever lost money in crypto or the stock market is when I've tried to be too clever. During COVID, I tried to be too clever. I dabbled in like picking stocks and flipping them. I dabbled in like picking like NFTs and crypto and flipping them. I lost 50% of the time because I was just gambling. Since 2016, apart from those periods there that I talked about, I've just invested the same amount every single month. Since September this year, this is the perfect example. This is a great idea, great example. Since September 1st this year, I invested 10 euros every single day into Bitcoin and the stock market. So what are we now? I'm recording this on January 20th, 2025. So since September 1st, I've invested 10 euros in Bitcoin every single day. I now have 1,896 euro in Bitcoin. I'm up 530 euro. I have a stock portfolio of 1,655 euro. I'm up 261 euro. So since September 1st, I've made a gain of 260, so 590, so 790 I've made a gain of since September. Now that's a bit of an outlier. To be honest, I don't care if it goes up or down. I'm going to do that every day for next year. We'll see where we are at the end of the year. Just let compounding take action. It's like this podcast. I think of this in like a 15, 20 year horizon. If I just keep doing great episodes every single week, I will be successful. There is no way I cannot be. Same with the stock market. If you invest a set amount, don't interfere. Don't get involved. Go read The Psychology of Money. Go read The Art of Compounding. And then they will tell you everything you need to know. What do you feel is the biggest missed opportunity in the journey to 399 episodes from Chris Brennan? Oh, another good mate of mine. And deeply to the core of the matter question. The biggest opportunity... that is not going hard early enough. So I dabbled in the pod for the first 3 years, been honest. So it's only the last 2.5 years that I really went in. And I would argue I only went all in 2 years. And I probably should have done what I'm doing this year, last year, being honest. I let self-doubt hold me back. That is the biggest missed opportunity in the podcast in my journey. Self-doubt held me back from traveling more, getting bigger guests, asking for bigger opportunities. So that is the biggest thing that I've missed. Who is the best interviewee? And in your own words, why was it me? From the incredibly humble and modest Paul Hayes. Paul Hayes episodes is up there as one of the most popular ever. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen. Just search Gary Fox, Paul Hayes. He is an incredibly funny, but also philosophical man. What motivates you the most to stay as consistent as you have? Oof, these questions are getting heavy and good. What motivates you most? Actually, Laura White has sent three questions. That's the first of Laura's questions. What motivates you most? I love it. I absolutely love doing podcasts. I love doing this. Actually, I find this quite hard, but I love the interaction with people. I find those interviews not easy to do, but I just get such a buzz off them. That's what motivates me, is that I love doing it. I've also had jobs that I found really hard, like the property thing was very, very difficult. So I now know what a really nice job feels like. This is an incredibly privileged position to be in. I love doing it. I will do it possibly forever. That's what motivates me, is the enjoyment I get from it. All the other stuff is great. I'm making progress in terms of financially. I'm making progress in terms of downloads. I'm making progress in terms of like the impact I'm having on people. All those motivate me as well. But the most important thing is that I love it. and I want to be able to keep doing it. The only way I can keep doing it is if I'm successful. On a deeper level, I'm motivated by looking after my family and making sure that I build something bigger than myself. So I build a media brand that is much bigger than myself that doesn't have the same risk as my other businesses had. Every business has risk, but as I talked about earlier, and I'm going to talk about it again in a while, problem selection is huge. I feel like I've picked a beautiful problem here. I feel that there is a wind behind podcasts, which there obviously is. They're having a moment, but I feel I'm uniquely placed now to really make a really special podcast and business out of this. Second question from Laura, which podcast episode surprised you the most? Oof. Actually, I'm going to have to come back to that. I don't actually know which one surprised me the most. I'm actually going to have to come back to that one. See, told you I haven't prepped all these. However, have you ever turned up to a podcast recording totally unprepared? Okay, I'll give an insight here. I don't prepare as much as people think I do. People think I do days and days and days of podcast prep. I don't. I do prepare. Of course I do. That's just respect and professionalism. However, I'm preparing every single day. I consume business content all the time. I'm constantly reading about founders. I'm constantly following founders' journeys. I'm constantly talking to founders. I'm constantly meeting them, constantly having coffees. I'm constantly asking everybody who should I be looking out for? Who's on my radar? So I am preparing every single day. What I don't do is over prepare. What I don't do is like I used to in college where you'd have a presentation, you'd memorize it, you'd beat your head off the table just trying to make it sink in. I don't do that because that's just a disaster and that's a nightmare. And anytime it's gone wrong, it's when I've been overprepared. So I don't prepare as much as you think I do. That's the answer to that one. I'll come back to which podcast episode surprised me the most. I cannot think off the top of my head. Thank you, Laura. How do you think your mindset has shifted with each episode? Or is there a specific episode number or episode that shifted your mindset? From Sinead O'Keefe. No, there hasn't been a number. Like, it isn't like, oh, I hit episode 300 and now I was like transformed. That, interestingly enough, is the biggest, probably one of my biggest blind spots I had psychologically when I was growing up and even recently, up to the last like 5-6 years, I think. I always used to think there was a silver bullet. I will be confident when, I will be happier when, I will suddenly have the ability to do this when. I used to think like once you get over a certain hurdle, you'll just wake up one day and be super confident or wake up one day and be super whatever, right? I always used to think there was like kind of a Hollywood moment, you know, when you're like, oh, suddenly he was transformed. I always used to think like that. Like life isn't like that. You don't suddenly like, boop, oh, now I'm actually whatever. It doesn't work like that. And it hasn't worked like that for this. I have got better and more confident and everything through doing just reps. Business and fitness are the exact same. The more reps you do, the better you get. So I've got better and my mindset has shifted with every single episode. I think of every single episode as a brick in the wall. So every single episode I do, I go, ha, I literally visualize a wall. I go, there's another brick. And I think of it like that. So that helps me. Every single episode is just that little extra bit of confidence and that little extra bit of motivation. Who was the most inspirational person that you interviewed? Oh, these specific questions are hard on the interviews because I'll talk about it again in a bit, but that's from Donna McGee, the most inspirational. Like, to be honest, you're going to think this is a cop-out answer. I've taken inspiration from every single person I've met because every single person's story is unique. The insight here is I always think of the next one. I take lessons from every single person, but I always think of the next one. That's why I don't have a favorite episode. That's why I don't have like, you know, what episode has like transformed your life. Every single one of them changed me in a little way. There's been a couple of episodes that have really cemented a couple of things for me. And that's where the shift towards body, business, brain has come from. I went on my own personal journey in COVID about my body, my business, and my brain. And I've emerged from it quite a different person. The same is true of the podcast. I used to just talk about like, oh, tell me about your business, blah, 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 turnover, marketing, hires, fires, whatever. Whereas I realized talking to all these uber successful people as I've got bigger guests in the podcast, I've realized like, this is such a cliche and I used to hate when people say it because there's always people that money would say it. I don't have money, so I can say it. Money doesn't make you happy. And I always used to be like, you cannot say that as a rich person because that's not true and you're still out there grafting. You need, you know, you can say that. It's just so patronizing to people. But what I have learned from people who have made a lot of money, I don't see the difference in them. They're just, they want to start the game again. So I've learned that the reward is the game. This is the reward. Getting to do this as my job is the reward. And I think more entrepreneurs need to realize that the reward is your day to day. So you need to make sure your day to day is rewarding. A lot of people put it on the long finger going, oh, when I exit the business, I'll be delighted. Most of the people I've talked to who have exited their businesses are not delighted. They're maybe content with the money, but almost to a person, they all say, I just can't wait to start again, or I've already started, or I've got this idea. So the reward is the game. The game is the reward. So play the game. That is what I'm thinking about now. How do I play the game and have as much fun as possible and be as successful as I possibly can be? Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights, and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets, to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global. Question: what advice would you give to a budding podcaster to get started? That's from Jason Kidd, and a related question from Gavin Kennelly. Any advice for someone wanting to start a podcast, do's and don'ts? I've actually just recorded a whole course about this. Go down below and buy it. I'm only joking. I have recorded a course, but I haven't got it live yet. So don't worry about that. I'm going to give you all the answers right here. What? I said this already. Podcasts are the hardest thing in the world to grow, the easiest thing in the world to start. So what advice? Just start. The sooner you start, the sooner you'll get better. The sooner you'll start to get listeners. The sooner you'll figure out what the hell it is. I was probably 100 episodes in before I realized what the hell this podcast was. It's the same as business. As a founder, you don't know where you are at the start. You think you're over here solving one problem and you'll end up going, it was actually this tiny little side problem we had that we actually solved for other people that made us all the money. Start. Start now is the only thing I would say. Podcasts are not overblown. Podcasts are not overhyped. Everyone doesn't have a podcast. All that is not true. A lot of people have podcasts, but how many of them have continued? That is the biggest thing. Next bit of advice, key piece. Do a podcast about something you love. Do a podcast about something you do not have to prepare for hours and hours and hours and hours every week. That is a heavy lift. That is a labor of love. That is something that you will not be able to sustain over a long period of time. Consistency is the name of the game in podcasting. Can I put out a great episode every single week? That is my number one metric for success. Did I put out a podcast this week? Did I put out a great podcast this week? If the answer is that is yes, I have won the week. My week has been a success. So pick something you can produce a podcast in every single week. Think long term. If you're not going to do it for a year, don't do it. That is no advice number one, because you will get demotivated after about episode 4. I guarantee you, because social media has messed up our brains. Social media thinks instant gratification is coming all our way instantly. It ain't. Your podcast downloads are going to look like this. When I actually had to go back and look at my stats, I was pulling all my stats for the last 5.5 years, and I went back to the start of like March 2019, I think. And like there was days there was 0 listeners. Like the first week, I think it was like 10. So like, this ain't going to be a glory ride. Like this is not like you look at TikTok and you see people getting 2 million views and a brand deal overnight. We are not the Hawk Tua girl here. Podcasting is a long journey. It's also one of the most rewarding. It's one of the best forms of content and is one of the most sustainable forms of content if you pick something that you love. Then all the rest of the stuff about gear and all that kind of stuff, don't worry too much. You can get a mic for about 100 quid. Don't worry. Shure is a brilliant brand. Rode is a brilliant brand. Start with either of those. Start with their entry-level mics and just get started. You have to do video in 2025. That is a non-negotiable as a podcaster. You have to do video. Even if you're recording remote, it's fine. Just make sure that you're doing video. Let me think what else you need to do. That's kind of it, really. Like record a season before you start. People always ask me as well, why do you record in seasons? Very simple. It gives me like a very clear project management tool so that I can say, right, I need 8 guests for this season. Season 1 is going to start here. It's going to end here. Also for sponsorship, I don't have a podcast that's doing like 10 million downloads a month. It's doing really well. Not that level though. Bigger podcasts can sell like single episodes. I do not have the resources or the downloads to do so. I sell sponsorship by the season. That's also a major reason why I do seasons. So I hope that is helpful. What are your best ways of staying grounded? Oh, interesting. Okay. What are your best ways of staying grounded? So does doubt ever creep in? And when it does, how do you manage it? I've kind of answered the doubt question. Staying grounded, it's not hard if you have a podcast. You're not exactly a superstar or a celebrity or anything like that. I'm always grounded. If anything, I'm too far the other way. Self-doubt has ruled me too much in the past and does creep in a lot, if I'm very, very honest with you. So staying grounded is not the issue. Staying confident is the issue. So how do I manage it? Action. Action removes doubt. Action removes anxiety. So when that is why I'm quite granular with like tasks and planning and stuff, because when I have a vacuum, doubt creeps in. When I overthink, doubt creeps in. When I don't have a clear plan, doubt creeps in. So I'm trying to find the sweet spot. I still haven't found it. I'm still working on it all the time. I'm still trying to find systems. That's why I have systems to avoid kind of like this like gap or this like room where like doubt can creep in and cause me to like second guess myself. Anytime I've had good ideas, the longer I've thought to do them, the less likely they are to happen. It's when I've kind of just pulled the trigger on something and just gone and did it. So that's my theme for 2025, is just massive action. I'm not allowing myself to second guess things. That's how I'm ended up booking Dubai. I'm going to Dubai in a couple of weeks to record podcasts. I've already been in London. I've London booked again for Friday week. Just booking and taking massive action. You can figure the rest of it out along the way. So I hope that helps. That's from Helena Deline. What's the most surprising lesson you've learned from interviewing founders and how has it shaped your own entrepreneurial mindset? That's from our good friends at Nostra. I think I've kind of answered this one in terms of the surprising lesson is that the when I disease, when I exit the business, I'll be happy. When I get to like 100,000 listeners, I'll be happy. Enjoy the game. Play the game. Have fun. Do things cool. I've actually got a tattoo to kind of symbolize this. So I've got, obviously I can't flip that around, so you're going to look at it upside down. That is the Lego Man. That is the blueprint for the first ever Lego Man. And that's to remind me to build cool things and have fun as I'm doing it. So that is kind of my philosophy and my ethos. From all the interviews you've done, what is the skill that's overlooked when starting out or that is generally made too late in startups? That is from Kate Minogue. Of all the interviews you've done, what is the skill that is overlooked the most starting out or that's generally made too late in startups? It's what I said earlier. It's waiting too long to speak to your customers. That's not really a skill. Communication, I think, is the biggest one. Communicating with stakeholders, communicating with your investors, communicating with your potential customers. And the biggest thing is just not pretending you know everything, being open. And the biggest lesson of all is that people don't know what they're doing. No one has it figured out. This, if I could put this as like, actually, I see the next question, so I'm going to hold that thought. So the skill is communication and sales. They're the two things you need to be doing before you even build your first anything. Communicate and sell. The greatest lesson you've learned after 400 episodes, that is from my good friend, Jenny Johnston in Azure. No one knows what they're doing. There's no adults in the room. That'll either terrify you or motivate you like it does me. All the best people I meet, they're just doing it. They're just out there doing it. They're not letting doubt hold them back. No one has it all figured out. A lot of people are more confident. A lot of people can give you the impression they know what they're doing, but most people are just figuring it out as they go. Do not let it hold you back by looking at other people, putting them on pedestals and going, oh, so-and-so's got it all figured out. Look, social media will give you that impression. No one knows what they're doing, so just get started and do your thing. What interview stands out most of the 399 episodes and for what reason? That's from Paul Sweetman. There's a part 2, but I'll do that one first. Again, this is really hard, right? And I hate giving these cop-out answers. From a personal level, I actually didn't even get to put out this interview. It's another story from another day. I interviewed Gary Neville, hero of mine since I was a kid, but the podcast gave me that opportunity to go and interview him in front of like 100 people. I love that. That was really one of those moments where I was like, this is awesome. I interviewed Steve Bartlett, I interviewed Jamie Lang, people like that. There are the moments where you're like, oh, this is pretty cool. And I've had like multiple moments where I've like hosted big events. Like last week, I was at the Pendulum Summit and there was 1,600 people in the audience and I was up on stage. It was just me standing on the stage in the convention center. And I always have this like out of body experience where like, I know I'm up there. I know I'm saying words. I know my hands are here, but it's almost like I'm not there. I'm just like doing this thing and not in like a, I don't know what I'm doing way, and more in a kind of like, this is cool. This is kind of a flow state. So I think when you hit the flow state, you know, you're doing something right. So I hope that answers your question, but not, look, there's been so many, like I've enjoyed every single one of them. And I hate giving cop-out answers because I hate when people do that myself, but I genuinely don't think of it like that. Part two from Paul Sweetman. Given you have a view of what success looks like, both what you do yourself and the 399 people you interviewed, what is the most common attribute that is displayed which has driven the success? I'll give you two answers that are the same. The one I love is they have the dog in them. And if you want to put that into corporate management speak, they're so resilient. They got the dog in them. They just ain't going to quit. And they're the people that I love. They are just going to make it happen no matter what. They are going through the wall if they have to spend 2 years with this pen chipping away at it, taking down like a centimeter of it a day. They are going through that wall. They are the people that make it. They're the resilient ones. They are the ones that are going to make it. I meet hundreds of founders all the time. And I often meet people and go, the idea you're working on, I don't like. I don't say this out loud because I'm not a wanker. I, in my head, will go, the idea you're working on, I don't like, but you are exceptional because you have the resilience and you have the get up and go. It comes down to this. All great founders are simple problem solvers. They take the first step. Right, what's the problem? What problem do I need to solve this afternoon, today, tomorrow, this week? They're able to boil things down to the very simplest thing and solve a simple problem. What is your favorite way to be creative? From Quiva to Frain? What a great question. Oh, I like that. My favorite way is this. My favorite way is to do podcasts, but that's kind of like for consumption. My favorite way to be personally creative is to write. I love my notebook. I have notebooks with me all the time. My favorite way is to read and then write in that order. I'll read like a book and then I'll write. That's my favorite way. What quote always stuck with you? Oh, I'll have to think about that for a second. What is the most common trait all major entrepreneurs just have? That's from David McGowan. I already have answered the common trait. It's the resilience. I'll come back to the quote. What life lessons would you pass on to your 20-year-old self for body, business and brain from Mark Connaughton, Class Kicks? Ooh, 20-year-old Gary. Yeah. Body, I would say that you will seek too much comfort, put yourself into zones of discomfort, put yourself in environments of excellence whereby you have a deadline to meet, whether it's a competition or, competition. You thrive better when you have external pressures. Don't slide into the comfort zone. Don't just keep going to the gym on your own because you will tread water for years and never make significant progress. Stay out of the comfort zone when it comes to the body. Look after yourself a little bit better. Probably need to knock the alcohol on the head. Start eating cleaner, but be more conscious about what you're putting in your body. That would be the one for the body. For the brain, figure out your own psychology. Take a step back here and figure out why you're doing the things you're doing. You will leave many great opportunities because you won't follow through, because self-doubt will cripple that. So figure out where that is coming from, understand your own psychology, read more psychology books and spend time talking to people about deeper issues to figure out why you behave the way you do, why other people behave the way you do, and you'll be on a quicker route to success because you will allow yourself to be successful faster. And then business, it is pursue things that you love. You'll do a lot of great things. You'll start a lot of businesses, but you won't love them all. Pursue things that you really, really enjoy and do not let, again, self-doubt come back to you. So I used to actually, one of my favorite ways to be creative is used to be photography. I actually ended up becoming a professional photojournalist and I used to love that. But I let self-doubt hold me back massively in that career because I didn't have any training in it. I literally just liked taking pictures. I was doing a journalism master's and a photojournalist called Niall Carson came in to give us a talk and I was just blown away. I was like, this is awesome. I just like one of those moments where the star aligned. I'm like, I want to do that. So I went up and asked him, unusually, because I didn't have any confidence then, I went up and asked him, I was like, could I do a shadowing work experience with you? And he was like, yeah, of course. And he brought me out like literally a couple of weeks later. And that started like 5.5-6 year career in photojournalism, like traveled all over the world, like was on every newspaper, did book covers, did magazine covers, did shoots in every single kind, was at every major sporting event, news event, everything for years. But I never achieved my potential in that because I didn't feel confident. I always felt like a fraud. So that'd be what I would give advice to myself. What qualities do you see more often in early stage entrepreneurs versus older entrepreneurs? From Anton McDonnell. Early stage entrepreneurs obviously have tons of energy, but are more focused on the product. Older stage entrepreneurs are focused on the problem. So early stage entrepreneurs focus on the product and what they're building. More mature entrepreneurs with experience focus on the problem they're solving and how they're going to get to those people who need the problem, who have the problem and can actually be served to. They're the biggest things. The qualities, early stage, you're kind of green as grass. You have a lot of naivety. And you don't have much of a network. They're the kind of things that I would work on if I was an early stage entrepreneur. And then older stage entrepreneurs understand the distribution problem, but they can be a slightly bit cynical and they need the enthusiasm of the early stage entrepreneurs. And the final question, how do you start a business when you have a family, specifically around drop-offs, dinners? That's from Instagram, Mahangal 2019. Great question. I literally had this today. We do a family meeting every week, like a little business meeting. We have a little family meeting every week. We sit down for half an hour with our diaries, with our calendars, and we sync up. Simple as that. We go, right, where are you Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday? What are you working on this week? What do you need me to do? What do you need to do this week? What's priority for you? What's priority for me? We literally sync up all the Google calendars. So we have Google calendars and we invite each other to everything that's important that the other person needs to be aware of or being part of. We sync up who's dropping off our daughter every single day. We sync up like meals. We'll do like a meal plan for the week. We'll plan like this. And it's definitely not easy, but anytime we don't do that, we end up having rows about it. Anytime we do the family meeting, it's a huge progress. So that would be my big one, is to do family meetings. And then once every month, I would do what's called a life breakfast, a life dinner. Once a month, go with your partner on your own, have a nice meal, either a breakfast or a dinner or lunch, where it's just the two of you, and just talk about good things, like talk about like what are they excited about. Like, you know, the way I talked earlier about like wins, learnings and highlights, you can do that as well. Like, try not to use corporate language because your partner will think you're an absolute knob. But, you know, what did you enjoy most this week or last month? What did you learn? What was challenging last month? You know, what do you need my help on this month? What are you looking forward to next month? What do you really want to do? And we'll map out the year as well and kind of go, look, what are the big things you want to kind of like do this year in terms of holidays and finances and fun and everything? Like, we'll try to be as transparent as possible about everything. Then we have like a new thing we're trying is we have like a board on the fridge, like a whiteboard, like a see-through whiteboard in the fridge that has like the days of all the months on it. And we kind of chalk off on that, what, like set like a backup to the Google Calendar. So you can see every day what you're working on. So that's kind of the biggest thing. Like, and that's kind of like the small logistical stuff. Like it is difficult. Like it is, when I started the business, we didn't have kids. And my partner was very, very supportive. Always, she always backed me in what I was doing. Like, there's been huge periods of sacrifice for her in terms of the time it takes, because you'll work late, you'll do nights, you'll do weekends. I had this explained to me probably the best a couple of weeks ago by Sahil Bloom in London, where he said, when you're self-employed, balance is not something you can always achieve. We should always strive for harmony. And that suddenly just rewired my brain, because you always think of balance as in like, I have to have everything evenly spaced out and evenly balanced, and everything has to line up. When you work for yourself, there are periods of massive imbalance and there are periods of balance. You will cycle through all of those. The biggest thing is awareness. You being aware and your partner being aware, going, look, I'm going into a 3-month cycle here whereby we have to launch this new product. There's going to be sacrifices here. Like, there is no way of working for yourself without having sacrifices. It's just not possible. It just is what it is. I wish it wasn't true, but it is true. You are going to have to sacrifice time. You're going to have to sacrifice events, and you're going to have to sacrifice certain things with people around you. But the biggest thing is to bring them on the journey with you. You have to be open about it. And at the early stages, you won't know how to explain that because you don't know yourself. You're just in this sea and you're kind of half drowning. So it gets easier as you get older because you get to know cycles. It's pattern recognition, right? You've seen this before. You've seen this movie. You know what it looks like when you want to launch something new, or when you're like, you're going to have to travel a bit, or, and you're more ruthless with your time when you're older. I won't say yes to a lot of things. I will not say yes to, hey, can you jump on a quick call? I would rather not, if I'm honest, Philip, okay? I'd rather not jump on a quick call with you. You haven't told me what you want to talk about. You haven't told me anything about what it is. I don't have 30 minutes of my day to just waffle to you about like asking me questions. You get ruthless with your time. That's absolutely okay. And you have to be. That would be my advice, is to be more ruthless with your time and make sure you're dedicating enough time to your family in that way. We waste a lot of time doing things we shouldn't be doing because we think we should. We go to a lot of events because we think we should. We meet these people because we think we should. You do a lot of stuff in your life that you think you should, whereas when you step back, nothing is forcing you to do that. My favorite quote, this goes back to Dave McGowan's question above. I don't know if it's my quote or I don't know if someone else's quote. Every time I think of something or someone complains to me or I have a choice to make, I go, that is your choice. Everything is a choice. You choose the hard road. You choose to meet that person. Everything is a choice. You have to pick what you're doing. If you don't pick and you go with the flow, you won't have time for your family. You won't have time for your kids because you're caught up in this melee of things that other people's agendas. Have your agenda. Be ruthless. Be stick to it. Most of all, be transparent with the people around you. Not everyone's going to go on this journey with you. Ideally, hopefully you've got a partner or someone that can support you on this, but in terms of like friends and people around you, not everyone's going to understand, not everyone's going to get it, and that's okay. You know, some people are in your life for a season, some people are in your life for a reason. It's up to you now to figure out which those are. There ends the Q&A. I hope you've enjoyed it. I actually really did enjoy it. possibly do another one for the 500th episode, or I might have the Collison Brothers on. Who knows? I hope you enjoyed that. If you did, if you're listening on YouTube, hit the thumbs up button, subscribe, all that usual stuff. If you're listening on audio, I'd love if you'd send this episode or any episode to a friend so they can try and discover the pod. That's the biggest way you can help me if you're listening, is if you made it all the way to 102 over an hour, you obviously enjoy it. If you do, send it to one person. You'd be doing me a solid. I'll see you back here next week for an interview episode. Until then, have a good one.